Figuring out how to celebrate your birthday can be a problem, especially if it's a big one. When you're Mike Stoller, one thing's for certain, there has to be music involved. Although he turned 80 this past March, the legendary songwriter who, with the late Jerry Lieber, composed such hits as Hound Dog, Love Potion No. 9, Stuck in the Middle with You, Stand By Me, and Is That All There is still celebrating. And tonight, Paul Schaefer is hosting a special fete at the 92nd Street Y with performances by the likes of Benny King, The Coasters, Betty LeVette, and Tommy Tune. Well, we wanted to get into the act as well, and we have invited Mike Stoller to stop by. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you so much.
And many happy returns.
Can I just have to...
You have to correct me on something.
On one thing.
Go
yeah,
ahead.
We didn't write Stuck in the Middle with You. We produced the record.
Okay, well, you produced a lot of records.
Yeah, we did.
I'd imagine this whole past year has been something of a celebration. What did you do on the official day, March 13th?
My wife took over a restaurant in Los Angeles, Kate Mantellini, and took over the whole place and invited a few friends, about 180 friends.
Well, it must have been very strange to be celebrating without Jerry Lieber.
Well, we didn't have the same birthday, so there's that. Yeah, of course, it's everything that we did so much together, and we were partners for 61 years.
And the last time you were here, it was with him, but he passed away 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You're from Queens originally?
Yes.
How does it feel when you come back to New York? Because you've lived in Los Angeles for so long.
Well, I actually have lived in L.A. this time for close to 25 years. But before that, I lived in Manhattan for 32 years. And before that, I lived in L.A. for 8 years. And before that, I lived in New York for my first 16 years.
But so you came back to New York when you started producing all of those hits?
Yeah. Well, we came back. Well, we had produced some in L.A., you know, Searching and Young Blood. That was still while we were in Los Angeles. And a lot of the early stuff for Elvis Presley.
I heard that you'd studied classical music initially, which is a far cry from Hound Dog. Was that what you thought you were going to be doing for a career when you were a kid?
No. My first love in music, well, there was one recording of Richard Strauss's Salome's Dances that I loved when I was about 3 years old. I used to play the record over and over. But then the next thing that really got to me was hearing Boogie Woogie played on the piano, and that really turned me on. From there, I got interested in Dixieland jazz, and then I heard Charlie Parker, and that, you know.
And you got advice from James P. Johnson, the great stride pianist and composer.
Well, that was when I was about 10 years old, 10 or 11. Yeah, I had about 6 lessons from him. And I had already started playing Boogie Woogie on the piano, but I didn't really know the full structure of the blues, which he taught me. And he probably could have taught me a whole lot more, but all I wanted to know at that time was Boogie Woogie.
He told you, understanding structure is the key to confidence. Has that been something you've lived by since?
Not consciously, but perhaps.
Well, how did you and Jerry Lieber connect? That was when you were in L.A.?
Yeah, that was a phone call. I had been given a gig from a friend of mine at Los Angeles City College. He had a $3 gig. And he got a $5 gig, so he gave me the $3 gig. And I went, it was a pickup band playing a dance in East Los Angeles. And the drummer took my phone number, and I thought, hey, I can use some $3 gigs, seriously. But instead, he gave my phone number to Jerry Lieber, who he was in high school with at Fairfax High School. And one day I got a phone call, and it was Jerry calling me. He said, my name is Jerome Lieber, And I understand that you played a dance in East Los Angeles. I said, yeah. And he said, I understand that you play the piano. I said, yeah. And he said, and you can write notes on paper, on music paper? I said, yeah. He said, well, I write lyrics. How would you like to write songs with me? And I said, nope. And he said, well, why not? I said, well, I don't like songs. Thinking that they were the songs that I didn't like that I heard on the radio. And he said, well, what do you like? So I became a bit pretentious and a bit honest. And I said, well, I like Bartok, Stravinsky, Thelonious Monk, and Charlie Parker. And to his credit, or to my benefit, he's uttered these famous words. Well, nevertheless, I think we ought to meet. He was very persistent. And I said, hey, you want to come over? Come over. And in the way I remember it, I was hanging up the phone when the doorbell rang. But he came in, and he had a school-type speckled composition notebook. And I said, are those your lyrics? He said, yeah. I said, well, can I see them? And I looked at them, and I saw right away structure again. Had a line of ditto marks, and a rhyming line. I said, these are 12-bar blues. He said, they are? He said, well, I guess that's what I'm writing.
So from the start, you were thinking in terms of rhythm and blues. Did you, do you ever wonder why your collaboration worked so well? Did you work similarly? Because he said one point, if I remember correctly, that he had no brakes and you had no motor.
Ah, well. Well, he was very persistent, as I've already kind of described, and I was a little more laid back and like that. I went to the piano. I started playing some blues because I was surprised that Jerome Lieber was writing blues. And he started to sing along as if he had been born in Mississippi. And we shook hands and said, we'll be partners. And that was in 1950 on our first meeting. And we remained partners, songwriting partners, for 61 years.
Do you remember the first song that you wrote together? It wasn't Hound Dog, was it?
No, no. The first song we wrote, we wrote about 7 songs the first time we got together, and then Jerry went home, or I drove him home, because I had a car, and we called each other, and he'd written 4 more, and I'd written 3 more, and, you know, we just a whole lot of stuff that probably, fortunately, we can't recall.
Did he help? Did ever help you with the music ever? Did you ever help him with the lyrics?
Sure, sure. We invaded each other's territory. And we had, as Jerry once said, the longest-running argument in the music business over whether the word was and or but, or whether the note at the end of the phrase went up or down. And, you know, out of those arguments that lasted 61 years, I guess some of it worked out well.
I'm talking to Mike Stoller, who is being feted for his 80th birthday at the 92nd Street Y tonight with some really great musicians performing.
Yeah.
I read that Big Mama Mae Thornton said once about you and Jerry, they were just a couple of kids and they had this song written on the back of a paper bag. Was that true?
I don't remember it as being a paper bag. I kind of remember it more like a sheet of yellow legal pad because we had met Big Mama at Johnny Otis's request. He called me. He said, do you know Willie Mae Thornton? I said, no. He said, well, you better get Jerry and come on down to my place because I'm going to run a session and I need some songs. And after we heard her and saw her, we were, you know, we thought she was great. We ran back to my place and wrote Hound Dog in about 12 minutes.
But then she had to trust these two teenage kids to write something that she would want to record.
Yeah, she wasn't too keen on the idea, and she was kind of letting us know that. But Johnny came over and said, Mama, he said, you want a hit, don't you? He said, well, these boys write hits, which was, I suppose, prescient on his part because we hadn't written any real hits. We'd written a few songs for Little Esther.
A wonderful singer in the Dinah Washington tradition.
Exactly, but they were not big hits. At any rate, she knocked us out, and finally she said, well, okay. And Jerry and I demonstrated the song. The band was laughing, and, you know, the trombone player was, you know, moving his slide up and down. They were doing a take on us, but they kind of dug it. Anyway, she sang the song.
And then you went on a trip on the Andrea Doria. How did Jerry react when he met you at the pier?
Well, you know, I'd been in Europe for over 3 months. We had written a song. It was unusual because almost everything we wrote was for blues singers. So most of the people we recorded and wrote for were black people, and because that was the music that we loved the most. But we had been asked by a group of white kids to write something, and we wrote a song that became a pretty big hit called Black Denim Trousers and Motorcycle Boots. And I got a check for $5,000, so I went to Europe for like 3 months.
Well, the Andrea Doria, that was a famous ship.
Yeah, well, that was coming back.
You got hit?
The Stockholm went two-thirds of the way through the Andrea Doria at night. Faulty radar reading or what have you. At any rate, after I finally got off, I thought, you know, this was it. I thought I was going to die. But we finally got into a broken lifeboat and picked up later by a freighter, and we came into New York. And I had enough cash in my pocket to send a wire to Atlantic Records, where I knew Jerry was supposed to meet me. At any rate, he was at the dock when I came down the gangplank of this freighter, and he said, Mike, we got to smash it. That was his first words. And I said, you're kidding. He said, no. Hound Dog. I said, Big Mama Thornton. He said, no, some white kid named Elvis Presley. I said, you're kidding. Wow. And then I heard it a few days later.
And that was the beginning of a collaboration with Elvis Presley as well. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back with more. My guest is Mike Stoller, the songwriter and producer who's being treated to an 80th birthday celebration with a tribute to the late Jerry Lieber tonight at 7:30 at the 92nd Street Y. It's hosted by Paul Schaefer, and there'll be performances by Benny King, Betty Levette, Melissa Manchester, Chuck Jackson, Tommy Tune, the Coasters, and many others. For ticket information, you go to our show page at WNYC.org.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in touch. You can look, but you better not touch. Poison ivy, poison ivy. Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a-creeping around. When the night has come and the land is dark,
and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me.
Benny King singing Stand By Me, composed by Mike Stoller and Jerry Lieber, and also produced by them. You didn't produce that record?
We did, but it was written by Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller and Benny King.
Yeah, we'll get to that. And Benny King will be performing tonight at the 92nd Street Y as part of a celebration of Mike Stoller and Jerry Lieber on the year of Mike Stoller's 80th birthday. It's hosted by Paul Schaefer. And I don't know whether there'll be strings backing him up,
well,
but that's a major part of that recording.
There will be strings, but they will be coming out of a synthesizer.
Well, let's go back to Elvis, because this is a really important moment. Here you are. I guess, as far as you were concerned, you were going to just be writing R&B songs. Nothing wrong with that. And then suddenly you have Elvis, and you wrote his first real hits, Jailhouse Rock, Treat Me Nice, Don't. Before that, he'd been doing covers of songs by others, hadn't he?
Well, the important cover, of course, that kicked off this relationship was Hound Dog. No. Even though his version of Hound Dog, which he'd heard another group do in Las Vegas, had been altered because the original song, of course, is a woman song. And so they changed the lyrics to be able to, for a guy to sing it. And
changed the melody a little bit, too.
A little bit, yeah, sure.
So he was so happy that you wrote his first hit that he contacted you? Is that how you came to write for him?
Well, it came through the music publishers that controlled Elvis Presley music. They were the Auerbach brothers who had Hill and Rain songs. Two Viennese brothers who came to this country and built quite a business out of country, primarily country music and also blues. And they asked us if we had another song that might be good for Elvis. And Jerry remembered a song we had recorded with two people who were gospel singers named Willie and Ruth, a song called Love Me. And we sent them a record, and Elvis apparently loved it and made a recording that was a big hit. And then they asked us to write songs for the movies, and we wrote a couple of songs, one of which became the title of, I think, his second film called Loving You. And after that, apparently Elvis wanted to meet us and to have us in the studio with him. And we'd written four songs that went into the film Jailhouse Rock. Jailhouse Rock was one of them, Treat Me Nice, You're So Square, Baby I Don't Care, and another song called I Want to Be Free. And so we went to the studio and met him, and we hit it off right away.
Well, Jailhouse Rock in some ways is similar, at least thematically, to Ride and Cell Block Number 9, different melodically, of course. But that one, interestingly, has been recorded over the years by a wide range of artists. This is a weird thing where Elvis covers one of your a song that you wrote for others, and then he does, well, this is getting too complicated. But anyway, what have happened to the Robins who did Ride in Cell Block Number 9?
Well, actually, the strange thing is that on that record, we felt that the bass voice that was in the Robins couldn't quite get the feel of what we wanted. And we got a ringer. We hired Richard Berry, who had been with the Flares and other groups.
The guy who did Oh, Get Out of the Car?
He's the guy who did Louie Louie. Mm-hmm. He wrote it.
Yeah, he did Oh, Get Out of the Car, too. Yeah, well,
You know more about it than
well,
I do.
Well, I know some things. Then you also, the Clovers, recorded Love Potion No. 9, another great song of yours. Whatever happened to the Clovers?
Well, the Clovers, I don't know what happened to them exactly, but they were one of our favorite groups at Atlantic that we had never worked with, but we admired very much. And their manager had left. He had been a sales manager for Atlantic as well, and he left Atlantic and got a job as the head of United Artists Records, a new record company at that time. And his name was Luke Kreffitz. And Luke called us and said, "Hey, guys, I need a hit because, you know, it's not only for the group, it's for me. I'm, you know, it'll make my job secure." And we were writing this song at the time, and we said, "Okay, we were going to do it with the Coasters," but he said, "Okay, instead we'll do it with the Clovers."
And it's got such clever lyrics. In fact, a lot of your songs were really funny. You suggest that it actually was kind of Jewish humor that translated well into rhythm and blues.
Well, perhaps so. You know, Jerry was a great lyric writer. I think he was one of the great lyric writers of the 20th century. And he wrote very funny songs. And he also wrote very serious songs, but they all had a bit of devil in them somewhere, some kind of devilish humor, because that's the way Jerry was.
And all those wonderful songs for the Coasters, that were so funny.
Oh, yeah,
but then more serious songs for the Drifters.
And for Peggy Lee.
My guest is Mike Stoller. We're celebrating his 80th birthday belatedly. It was actually in March, but he's going to be feted tonight at the 92nd Street Y by an all-star lineup of Benny King, Betty LeVette, Melissa Manchester, Chuck Jackson, Tommy Toon, the Coasters, and some others. And let's talk about Stand By Me, recorded by Benny King, who had been with the Drifters.
Yeah.
And he's going to be there tonight. It, as I understand, is still the third most played BMI song on the radio and television since that organization was founded in 1940.
Well,
you must be rolling in dough.
I don't know about that.
Well, you said that Benny King...
I don't roll in it.
You said Benny King was one of the writers. He was kind of doodling with Jerry when you arrived at the office one day?
Well, he and Jerry were working on the lyrics of a song, and I came in, and Jerry said, "We're working on this song for, you know, Benny's first solo recording session." And I said, "Well, what do you have on it so far?" And Benny started to sing, and I, you know, figured out the chords at the piano there. And then I came up with a bass pattern, the one that people recognize now as part of the song. Boom, 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 etc.
And then you did that string arrangement where the strings keep on rising.
Right. Well, that we called Stan Applebaum, who was a fellow that we had first worked with and first contacted to write strings on a prior record with the Drifters.
Now, Stand By Me is also the title of a famous gospel song. Were you listening to gospel music when you were writing these songs?
Not so much then, but I'd heard a lot of gospel music. Sister Rosetta and so on and so forth. But I think Ben knew the song because Ben had church background, as so many rhythm and blues singers did. And I think that was partly the inspiration for it. And he was working with Jerry on the words, and I worked with him as well on the tune and especially on the bass pattern, which when Jerry heard me playing the bass pattern that first day, he said, "That's a hit."
Burt Bacharach has said that everyone in the business was amazed at how you and Jerry could build dramatic orchestration in the studio behind R&B groups, and how many songwriter producers try to pick up tricks from you for their own records. Can you hear your influence on other people?
Oh, I can hear it on other records.
Phil Spector was working for you, wasn't he?
He was. He
must have been strongly influenced.
I suppose he. Well, in this sense, as I think about it, we used four guitars, lots of percussion, et cetera, et cetera. But we went for very specific individual sounds. And when he started producing on his own label, he used multiple guitars and multiple percussion and multiple drummers, but they all did the same thing at the same time. He went for that, you know, what they call the wall of sound.
What about a record like Spanish Harlem?
Well,
was he involved in that?
He may have played guitar on it.
But that was you.
I worked the arrangement out with Stan Applebaum. I actually wrote the saxophone solo and specified it should be a curved alto, and I wrote the introduction, that ding 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 ding. But I missed out on being a writer because my first wife, I had not been at home with my children, and she said, "You've got to have dinner with the kids." And I was supposed to go up to Jerry's house to meet with he and Phil. And when I got finished dinner with the kids, I called, and Jerry said, no rush, because we finished the song already. However, when they were demonstrating the song for Ahmet Ertegun and Jerry Wexler at Atlantic in their waiting room with the piano, I instantly started playing that riff that became the marimba line in the record.
I've heard that Jerry Wexler wasn't a big fan of your orchestrations. Why? They are so fabulous.
Oh, well, I think, you know, what happened the first time was the first time we used strings on "There Goes My Baby," and we played it for them, and Jerry got furious. He said, "You're flushing our money down the toilet. What is this? It sounds like two different radio stations or three different radio stations playing at the same time." And Ahmet, being much more of a diplomat, said, "You know, fellas, we know you make hit records. You've made a lot of them for us. But, you know, you can't hit a home run every time you get up at bat." Nevertheless, eventually they had this record in the can. They released it, and it became number one pop and R&B. So, you know, we saw something in it that they didn't see.
Now, you had your own record company, Spark Records, and then you gave it up and signed a deal with Atlantic?
Right.
Did you ever regret that?
No, never. Never, because we didn't really... We actually started that record company with a mentor of ours, Lester Sill. We didn't have the money or, you know, the wherewithal, the history to sell the records. Some of them were big hits in Los Angeles, but not elsewhere.
But you had to have big distribution deals in those days.
Right. Well, Atlantic had that. And I think it was Nesui who hung out sometimes at our office and loved the work that we were doing, who sent it to his brother and said, these guys make great records.
But this also allowed, the Atlantic deal allowed you to produce for other labels?
It did. It wasn't exclusive, but it was a very worthwhile relationship. And as a matter of fact, we did make some records for RCA Victor at the same time as we made records for Atlantic, and none of the RCA Victor records ever did anything. They got rave reviews, but no sales. And, you know, because they were really selling refrigerators.
Well, you were no longer with Elvis at this point. He was with RCA.
Yes, we did make records with Elvis during that time, but we were not ever given the credit of producer, nor did we make any royalties from it other than for the song.
Now, tonight, I mentioned some of the people who'll be performing. Also, your wife, Corky Hale, mm-hmm. who is brings you back to jazz.
Yes, yes. She, I fell in love with her 11 years before I met her from a record album she did on Pacific Jazz Records with the singer Kitty White. It was just voice and harp, and the harp playing just knocked me out.
She also plays piano, right?
She does.
What is she going to be doing tonight? What do you know is going to be performed
Well,
tonight?
She's going to play and sing one song. You know, she was Billie Holiday's accompanist when she was very young.
Wow. And Betty, all of the people who are going to be there, Betty LeVette, Melissa Manchester, Chuck Jackson, Coasters, all
they're
material
all
that you
be
wrote
there,
and...
Yeah.
And produced?
Some of it we produced, all of it we wrote, and...
I understand you still have a number of things on your plate. What are you doing these days?
Well, Jerry and I started to write a musical a number of years ago, and since he's passed, it was not finished, and we're trying to... I would like to finish it and get it done. And I'm working with somebody in England because the subject matter is British. It's a story of Oscar Wilde, a musical about his life.
Meanwhile, there's been another musical featuring your songs with the Lieber and Stoller songs.
Oh, yes.
So that did rather well. My great thanks to Mike Stoller, the songwriter-producer. He's being treated to an 80th birthday celebration with a tribute to the late Jerry Lieber tonight at 7:30 at the 92nd Street Y. It's hosted by Paul Schaefer and has a lot of great entertainers. For ticket information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been great.
Crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one. I'm gonna be standing on the corner.